nightmare.
Hello and welcome to Cinema Subculture, the podcast where we discuss everything strange, obscure and downright messed up in the world of movies. My name's Gary.
And I'm Simon. So welcome to episode 29. Tonight we're going to be looking at the film Martyrs. Thank you for joining us.
Directed by Pascal Laugier.
Yes, released in 2008. French film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know how you came across this film, but how did you come across this film, Gary?
Well, it was Mark Kermode originally introduced me to it. I just posted the video. It was around the time I was sort of getting into more harder extreme films, and he said he found this quite a tough one to get through. And then I read a review of it, I believe it was Total Film, which gave it 5 stars. And I thought, that's interesting. If that's a kind of a 5-star extreme movie, that sounds like it's right up my street. And I checked it out and I thought it was excellent. Really enjoyed it.
How long ago was that?
Well, 2008 came out, maybe 2009, 2010,
yeah, maybe something like that. I was going to say, this is kind of like, this was my induction into like the kind of extreme films. I remember, I don't know why you gave me a loan of this. This was way before we started even thinking about the podcast.
Yeah.
I really don't know why you get, what?
Maybe we're just talking about horror films.
Maybe that's what it was, we're having a conversation. I remember watching this, didn't know what to expect, really. You know, like you said, it was extreme. So I kind of went in with my mind open, but like I couldn't have expected what I was about to see. I don't think, even like now watching it, like when you get to that halfway mark and kind of shit kicks off.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a mind fuck, you know. Just like where it comes out of. I don't know. I challenge anyone to see that coming first time they watch it, you know.
I think it's one of the most interesting horror films that of recent times. Really like Laugier's style, how he's constantly, he's playing with genre cliches and just playing with the narrative. So he's like constantly not deceiving the audience, but just trying to stay like one step ahead. Just sort of a lot of misdirection. You think it's going one way and then you hit a brick wall, kind of. It's kind of like a maze type structure into it. Every 10 minutes you take a like extreme U-turn into another movie almost. But yeah, it's a tricky thing to do because you don't want to piss the audience off or kind of disrespect them, but I think he walks a line very well. It's interesting, in an interview he said he wasn't really trying to do something postmodern in the sense that it wasn't a comment on the genre itself. It's more just about just entertaining the audience, sort of in the Hitchcock tradition. It's about the audience, it's just trying to keep them entertained, and sort of maybe at this point in the history of horror, that's kind of where we've got to, because the genre tropes are so marked out, are so well defined, that you kind of think as the section, you go into a section of a film, like, okay, it's this type of film, but then it's just saying, alright, let's do this, go this way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like when you first see the kind of the monster, you know, after we see the initial escape from the captivity, and then you see the monster for the first time, and then skip forward and you're seeing this haunted girl who's, you know, attacking this family, which that comes, I mean, that's when it skips to that family and you're you know, you're with them and you're kind of listening to their conversation and stuff, and then just open the door and just like, and you know, an action film almost, you know, blown away.
Aye.
And then like, we're reintroduced to this haunted little girl, she's essentially monsters. You kind of think, okay, that's what this film is. I mean, that film is still being made now, you know, in the States. Like, there's films with that imagery that are coming out all the time. And then we lose that character, you know, about 20 minutes, 30 minutes later? After being introduced to our friend who we saw when we were younger. And then it just descends into, like, something completely different. It's like two films they've been intentionally stitched together. Yeah. You know, you just, as I say, I don't know. You just never see it coming, I don't think.
Mm.
And that does, you know, come from, like, you know, you just see, like, the kind of Hitchcock, you know, style and just totally twisting what you think is going to happen into something that, like, of course this was going to happen. You know, it's almost like, of course this was going to happen.
Yeah.
When you see it and why the character went to the house and it's definitely some of the most extreme imagery I think I've seen.
Yeah, yeah.
In a film. Would you say that as well?
Yeah, I think so. It's pretty excruciating when it gets to the nasty stuff.
Mm. It's not even like the gory stuff. It's not even it like that. It's just it's the brutality,
right?
And I told you, I said when we were watching it like this time, like the sound design is immense.
Mm.
You feel every single punch,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just unrelenting.
Yeah.
To the point where when she's effectively skinned alive at the end, it's almost like a release for the character and you, because you're like, oh, this is us finally getting to the end of it, because I don't know if you could watch much more, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the brutality. It's just, it's and the character doesn't know why it's happening, we don't know why it's happening. It's kind of like, I heard I think I was watching that thing with Kermode, he was talking about Hostel and the relationship to that, you know, those type of films, where the difference has been this actually is about something.
I had broken down the kind of different plot points, genre points that I found in the film. So I'd say it kind of starts off, I think it's like a kind of supernatural ghost type story. You've got the wee girl who was tortured, and she keeps seeing this thing, this kind of demon thing.
Yeah.
So that's
don't know what she's running away from.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's like a traditional horror movie. Then it kind of moves into, like, you've got the family and all that, which is a traditional horror first act setup, or you've got the cool family, everything's all right. And it has a kind of cool misdirection when it first goes to the house, you see the sister being chased.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's actually her brother just chasing her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, an American horror film, that house would be the orphanage that the kids grew up in.
Right.
Or something, you know what I mean? That's what would happen, probably. You know, and you'd start to find out the backstory about this little girl and things. She's, you know what I mean? That's the way it would go.
Yeah,
and again,
yeah,
that's the kind of, it could go that way. You know, that's the kind of what we're trained into probably thinking.
Then the killing scenes where it's just turns into a fucking brutal kind of revenge movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Then it kind of moves towards a kind of sort of more character study, where the plot moves towards is the things that Lucy has seen as real, or is she just like having like psychological problems? And it's that whole dynamic with her and Anna, where Anna doesn't really know if Anna almost takes sympathy with the family when she's trying to rescue the mother and stuff like that. And there's that dynamic that's kind of traditional in horror. Is a supernatural real, or is this person just crazy?
Well, and even like when you're saying, like, Anna, when she's got the family in the shower, and all of a sudden the mother wakes up and starts to, and it's like something from a supernatural horror.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she sees it in the mirror first of all, which is that you know, even if it's just a psychological supernatural thing, you know, it's epic, and then you're like, oh, holy shit, this woman's actually just alive. You know what I mean? You're programmed into believing that this is going to be some sort of kind of cheap scare, you know, in the mirror, and then she's going to go, you know. But no, the woman's alive. You know what I mean? That's awesome. It's like, it just takes you totally aback.
Yeah. But then I quite like how he kind of moves into like something like Von Trier or Dreyer might do story wise, where it's about the triumph of kind of irrationality, where as Anna finds out that Lucy was kind of right.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would traditionally think of as being the rational was transcends and becomes the.
I like as well, I mean, you mentioned it when we were watching it, you know, because I think you are eventually sure, in my opinion, that Lucy is seeing these things. Yeah, that, I think that's what's implied, and I think that's more or less a given, in my opinion, that she's definitely she's hurting herself. Mm. Yeah.
Well, it's complicated, I think. But
right. Well, in my opinion, it's definitely that's what I take away from it. It's definitely in her head. I mean, even down to when the woman comes in later on and says that some people end up seeing things, and you know, right? Okay, but it's true. Like for a large part of it, like it's very well the way it's shot and staged. You're not sure.
Definitely, yeah.
And you know that Anna hasn't seen Lucy necessarily hurt us in this time frame. Maybe she has when they were kids, whatever. You know, right. You don't know that the stuff that time in between. But at this point, the way it's shot, Anna's never present enough to see what's happening. Mm. So you're never quite sure whether this is supernatural or if it's in her head.
Yeah.
Until I think near the end when I think it's definitely a psychological thing.
Right.
But that's my opinion.
The scene where Anna sees
her like, cutting herself.
She's getting her head beaten against the wall and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, there's that name with the bit which actually splits her
well,
arms. But
yeah, the only thing I would... That's probable that it was Lucy doing it to herself, but I think in the kind of world of the film, the question is... Hmm?
Sorry, and also when we see the girl later on that Anna rescues from the...
Right.
In the basement. And she's, you know, the woman says she sees, like... flies or...
Yeah,
is it,
right, okay.
Or, you know, and she's cutting her flesh off. Sorry.
Okay, but in the world of the film, the people are trying to discover, does God exist?
Right.
Does heaven exist or does it not? Yeah. So that, and that means that either supernatural things can exist or they can't. So it's that, if they can, if God is real, then surely... things like this can also exist.
I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like if, you know, you could have God existing without any supernatural existence on this plane.
Right, possibly.
I feel that, I mean, I'm not saying one word or another. To me, there could be an afterlife scenario that doesn't necessarily impact on this life. So you're implying that this could be like some sort of demon that's been unlocked by our torture?
Yeah, I'm just thinking the traditional horror thing is that strict ghosts or no ghosts. But I don't think if you're bringing like God into the equation, then I don't think you can separate them.
Okay, so it could be like, you could think of it as like a kind of...
I think it's silly to say I believe in God, but... I don't believe in like evil spirits kicking about. It seems kind of ridiculous, because it's the same thing. You're believing in like something that's kind of unprovable.
I don't know about that.
Okay,
like but no, I think there are people that believe in God, but don't believe that there's any effect on this or our existence. That we still have free will. He's there if you want him afterwards, but. You know, that's a place you would, you know, heaven would be a place you go, but it's not necessarily something that has any effect on this plane. Not every religious person believe in ghosts. They don't.
Right.
You know, they believe that people are maybe waiting on the other side for us. But they don't necessarily believe that there are, they don't necessarily believe in hauntings or demons.
Yeah.
On this plane.
Okay.
Again, like, yeah, you're bad, you're going to go and get your ass roasted, but.
Right.
That you know, no, would you
possibly
say?
See my knowledge of theology is probably
I don't really
but
have
on a kind of superficial
all,
level that seems a bit like you're picking and choosing what you want. The devil lives under my bed, I talk to him, like you're gonna think,
what is he says?
Someone says I've got a monster living under my bed,
tell me something,
and
sorry.
He talks to me and he hits me with a fork and things like that,
right.
I think, I don't believe you. But it's kind of the same as, like, there's a guy up in the sky, I'm going to go up there and I die and, like... Just
I mean, I agree that I don't believe... I don't have a faith, right? But I don't believe that the two are mutually exclusive. You have to... If you believe in God, you have to believe in spirits here on Earth. I don't think, you know... I think you can... If you're going to believe you could... perfectly believe that there's two different planes or more than one plane and that's where you would go afterwards,
right?
But that's why you can't stay here once you'd pass,
right?
We're getting to different things, but if you take what you're saying there, the characters of the film, the I'm going to say corporation, but like the people, the Illuminati, to ask right, people yeah. who are doing these experiments, mm. they obviously, I would say, believe in God. Mm. Or, well, they're searching.
They want to, yeah.
And they don't seem to think that the things that are affecting these girls now are real.
Well, possibly. Mm. Although the actual, like the enforcers, the actual people that do the work,
mm-hmm.
are maybe separate from the people who are funding it or financing it.
I guess so.
They're the ones that kind of want to know.
It's just that conversation she has with Anna when she's laying it all out for saying that some girls can't, you know, they end up seeing things. Basically, the failed mm. people yeah, that doesn't yeah. necessarily mm. work on, end up seeing things that aren't really there.
Mm.
I get what you're saying, that like, if you're going to say that someone's going to unlock this, like seeing God or seeing mm. the next life
mm.
through the martyrdom mm. that's expressed in the film, then who's to say that the same couldn't be said that it's unlocking seeing these evil
yeah.
spirits, whatever. Mm. I understand that, mm. but to me, I think it's definitely in her head. From the fact that right. you see her carrying out like self-harming,
mm.
but that's debatable. But the point I was trying to make at the beginning was that it's shot very well to the point where you see it for, you know, definite
yeah.
that it's her. But before that point, it's very easily, like, you can say that it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not explicitly shown to the Anna character. It's played in such a way that it's you don't know.
Yeah,
you know, and that's really creepy and works really well for the film,
mm.
and would probably work well enough.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, if they were just to play it out that way,
mm-hmm.
and not have any, the rest of the film, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If that had been the film, it would probably work pretty well for, you know, for that section of film, but mm-hmm. anyway, sorry. So yeah. Next genre.
yeah, so then we kind of just move into the, it throws in a kind of mad cult conspiracy thing, and then the most blatantly torture porn sections
mm-hmm.
Of the film. But I think what elevates it above that is that Logie does find a philosophical grounding for to do torture porn in film. I think it's from himself that he described it as an anti-hostel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think what makes the film special is that he does find a way to do that kind of explicit violence, but it is kind of based in, he finds that religious kind of grounding that it has happened through history. And therefore, it's not just about Saw or Hostel, where it's just as the porn thing, it is just about the torture.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Although it's brutal. But as I said before, it's not a gory film necessarily. Until there's gore and the kind of horror elements in the Lucy story. Don't get me wrong, but once it gets to the actual torture porn-esque part of the film, there's really little gore till the end. But even in that, I mean, I remembered it being a lot worse than it actually was.
Mm,
when,
right.
when we watched it, you know, when she gets skinned, you know. So,
well, the stuff with the rescued martyrs probably the
yes, that's true. That's true. But that I don't feel that's not visually being inflicted on someone on screen.
Right. Okay.
You know, whereas with something like Saw, it's about how do we cut this person up or rip this person apart or make them do it themselves, whatever.
Aye.
Whereas this film doesn't feel like that. It feels like, they're getting beat up effectively, but it doesn't feel like that's why it's happening. Like the girl that gets rescued from the basement, they're not peeling her skin off with that helmet. They've put that on and it's caused this, but you know that hasn't been their intent necessarily. They've been trying to protect herself from herself because she starts cutting herself up and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the intent of the captors isn't necessarily just to like slice and dice.
Mm.
Whereas in something like Saw or Hostel, I feel that's more the intent.
Yeah, it's that thing, like, this film has kind of been associated with a loose new French extremity movement
mm-hmm.
in the same kind of vein as Irreversible.
Uh-huh,
and it's okay. kind of that thing, if you're going to show torture on film, should you do it in a lighter way like Saw, or should you do it like this? People are going to say this is like too much, but it's that thing, what's the kind of responsible way to do it? And I think Logie is kind of saying, okay, you like these torture porn movies, have a bit of this, like,
yeah.
Try to see what you think of this. Because I think something like Saw, the first one anyway, it tries to have a kind of intelligent, like, underpinning to it, like a kind of
I feel it's trying borrow from Seven. I mean, effectively, that's what it is.
I feel
it's
a wee bit, just a bit superficial, and it's like slightly derivative from Seven. And it's a bit.
Yeah. But I think it's the first one. There's not a lot of gore in the first one, really. Right, you know what I mean? A lot of it is even implied, like I'd say, you know. But once you get to, like, well, two, I guess, but like three and four. I mean, there's one of the films where the, you know, one of the guys has got, like, he's basically crucified.
Right.
And he has basically pins through the spaces between the bones in his arms and his legs.
Aye.
And those get twisted until everything breaks.
Right.
And it's one in his, like, head as well, and his head twists.
Mm.
And it's been caused by someone else breathing in, like, a mask, and it's pressure or something like that, right? You know what I mean? That's like, it's cartoonish. It's it's like a fun ground, fairground, you know, ride. That's what that is. Mm. It's not like, it's just very like pushed to the point where it becomes like just safe violence.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. Whereas at no point in this film, especially when you're going first viewing, do you feel like this character is safe or anyone's safe? You know what I mean? And again, it's not even like it's not in Saw, it's not even usually any person, like a killer or anything, doing the violence to the person. It's usually like a trap, or, you know, like a piece of machinery that does it. Whereas in this, it's cold, and it's the person doesn't speak, nothing, you know, and it's, you just don't know why they're doing it, and even everything from feeding the person.
Yeah,
giving them water to shaving the head to just literally beating the pulp out of out of the person. It's just there's no explanation for it. Given within to the characters, whereas like in Saw, it's like, you've been bad, so this is gonna happen because you didn't like life, motherfucker. Yeah. You know. A totally different spectrums. You know, ends of the spectrum. You know, I don't understand how one person, you know, people can watch that and then totally condemn the other, because one's trivializing the violence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas the other one's actually saying, like, wait a minute, this is kind of real. This is real. Like, you know, like, shouldn't it be happening? You know.
Yeah.
This is fucked up. So, what do you think of, like, I've seen a few people mention about this film and misogyny in the same. Same Bryce, what's your views on that?
I didn't find it particularly bad. I mean, it's horror. It's a horror movie with women in it, so it's a wee bit of that you can throw at it.
I don't know if maybe that's coming from the fact that this organization in the film seems to primarily use women. But then they mention they justify that in the story by saying it only seems to happen to women, do they not?
Yeah, I think so.
There's something about that, because like something about they respond to the transfiguration. But I don't know. I just wondered what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with it.
I mean, it's not something I thought about, because there's no. Not that there's gratuitous nudity or anything like that happens, or anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anything, you know, I don't feel there's anything that, to me, it's a very strong story with these two female characters from when they're young, and the one that's tortured, and, you know, their friendship. And then, like, I guess I just was like, that was the least thing I was thinking about, you know, because it's just when it changes.
Sure.
When it skips into that, like, fifth gear in the second half of the film, effectively. I just was what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
So you know, I didn't really think about it much.
Maybe the worst bit you could accuse it of is where you've got the guy, the massive guy, just like punching Anna and stuff. But I mean, you have the woman who's like one of the torturers, keepers as well. So,
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the thing is that the point where Anna accepts the violence and the torture. But for me, that's like the kind of Jesus thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna maybe see if you thought of that. Like, what's your thoughts on this? Is going maybe too off, but like the idea about violence. If someone's just kind of attacking you for no reason, what do you do? Do you fight back, therefore justifying their initial attack, or do you say, I'm better than you, so you're just going to let you beat the fuck out of me?
Hmm.
Like, it's what Jesus said, like, forgive them, Father. They know not what they do, type idea. Like, so, and Anna's kind of saying, right, I'm just going to let this happen, because I'm kind of better, I guess. Mm.
I remember seeing this to you when we watched the second time. We watched it together. I wish that the character of like the woman who comes, the boss, the one who speaks to Anne at the end,
right,
and finds out what she's seen.
Mm.
I wish she hadn't told her what they were trying to do, like right, trying to find that look, okay, you know, that kind of acceptance,
mm,
right? Because I don't know. I feel that. Does that give the game away?
Possibly. Yeah.
You know, like.
It would seem.
Maybe she thought, if I just stay still here, they'll let me go, and then they take out that place. And
yeah, it would seem that the confusion of not knowing would be more likely to cause that thing. Mm-hmm. But I guess you have to tell the audience what's happening.
But watching it the first time, I still did not know what was going on at that point. So I guess the character would still be like, what? You know, like, why are you doing this, you know? Mm. So I guess. But I don't know. Cause I don't get the fact. I don't necessarily get the, you know, Anna switching and saying, like, you know, I'm not going to react because I'm better than you. But I could see her, like, I don't know, it's just acceptance of it, isn't it? It's like trying to go somewhere else.
Mm.
I don't know. On a sidebar, do you feel if someone punches you and you punch them back, that justifies them punching you in the first place?
Yeah.
You do?
If they punch me for no reason.
Right, if they punch you for no reason and then you punch them back.
Yeah, well, see, I don't really know what I think about that topic. I can go both ways. It's a difficult one.
It depends. A single punch to your face, and if you punch back, I don't think that justifies them punching you in the first place. But it's different if you're in a fight, I guess.
Yeah.
Someone starts beating you up and you fight back.
Yeah.
I don't know if that justifies them going after you in the first place. That gives a lot of people a lot of scope there.
Well, if we live in a society that's hopefully based on reason,
sure,
and people act rationally, then that shouldn't happen. But it's when it's like reacting to someone like Hitler or something. If you have someone who's gonna act in a rational way and not follow like the protocols of like international diplomacy,
mm-hmm,
you therefore have to react in a way that's, by invading Germany, you're kind of reacting in a way that contradicts your own principles as well, because you want, mm-hmm, to live in a world that's based on reason,
mm-hmm,
but it kind of undermines your own value system in a way.
Yeah, I get you. Like, so I wouldn't punch anybody.
Yeah,
I don't think I've, like, unless someone punched someone I loved, mm, or something, you know, mm, right? So I wouldn't go about punching somebody.
Mm.
So what you're saying is, so if someone punched me or someone I loved and I punched them back,
yeah,
that's me undermining my own value system because I've acted essentially irrationally.
Yeah.
Even though I can rationalise it in my own mind. I get that.
You could justify it in the sense, they did it first, so I'm just reacting.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
A tough one.
But then I don't feel So here, if someone punches me, that me punching them back, because they've punched me in the first place, that hasn't justified me punching them back. I can justify it to myself,
right?
But it definitely doesn't justify them punching me in the first place. Unless I was calling them a wee wanker or something. No, you know, no, like. So if someone punches you, come up, so Martin fires in here the new, punches you in the gob, no reason at all.
Yeah.
And you punch him back. He's like, I can't. I should have punched you. That doesn't. You punching him back doesn't justify him punching you in the first place, because what reason did he have to punch you in the first place? Because you knew if he punched you, you were going to punch him back. Now you're talking about time travel, my friend. That's Back to the Future stuff. But in the same hand, you punching him back isn't justified.
Yeah, but Jesus is able to say, I'm so mentally stronger than you, I can take your punishment, and I don't have to react in that primal way.
I'm
actually much stronger than you.
I agree with that side of it.
But at the same way, you can also see taking that punishment as a sign of weakness, which is that contradiction that
I can see this. I can see what you're saying with the accepting and saying, I'll take it because I can. You know, I'll take it because I can. I don't need to retaliate to you because I'm stronger than you. Yeah. I'm better than you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do this to anybody. I'm better than you. Mm. So I can agree with that. Mm. And as much as I think that a retaliation is irrational and it could end up prolonging the conflict, I don't feel that a retaliation justifies the initial attack.
Okay.
In the same hand, I don't feel that the initial attack justifies the retaliation. Just because someone punches doesn't mean you should punch them back.
Mm.
But if someone punches you and you punch them back, it doesn't mean they should have punched you in the first place. That's what I'm saying.
There
we go. We're having some fucking deep conversations, eh?
Indeed,
eh? Yeah, I like these. Yeah. That's fun. See more things, Gary. If a bear shits in the woods, does the old man in the white hat hear it?
Aye, does he smell it?
So anyway, see, they're talking about remaking it.
There was talk.
The guy that directed The Last Exorcism.
Right.
I don't know how I feel. It's not a film I thought, I even like in any breath thought like, oh, this could, you know, oh, they might remake this.
Right.
Because I can only feel it'll be watered down.
Mm.
And you know what I mean? Do you think?
Or
like torture porn. Like Hostelized or something.
Yeah, I think so.
I think a film that exists on a plane where the director has said it's like the anti-hostel, it's like a kind of reactionary jolt to the kind of, as I say, the fun fair that Hostel and Saw has become.
Mm.
I feel that that's what they're going to do with it, is kind of bastardize it into a film that's a knock-off Saw. But could be wrong, but... Yeah.
Is it still happening? There was a rumour that it was going to be Kristen Stewart, but I think an interview I saw with Pascal was saying that was bullshit.
Oh, really?
She'd be just said that at one interview, like, she liked the film, and then, like, it's like, you, like, throw it out there, and they'd be like, oh, Kristen Stewart's going to be in a new Mars.
Yeah. That the producer of the film said he would like Twilight actress to be in it, though her presence in the film was later denied by Stam, who's Daniel Stam, The Last Exorcism. But it is saying, you know, Stam has said, the original film is very nihilistic. Well done. The American approach that I'm looking at would go through all that darkness, but then give a glimmer of hope.
Right.
You don't have to shoot yourself when it's over.
Right. Okay. What do you think of the end? I quite think it's a really cool ending.
The first time, I don't know. I didn't know what had happened.
Mm.
I was still very much like, what's happened? Mm. Like, why were they killing the woman? Why were they punching her again? So, yeah, the second time, it's very bleak.
Yeah.
You know, it's, so essentially, she sees what's next. We were led to believe she was martyred for 3 hours, I think they say.
Right.
She sees something else, which isn't what's around her. And the woman, the kind of head woman, or not the head woman, but the head woman that's in charge of that facility, gets to speak to her about what she sees.
Mm.
and she's meant to address the kind of other Illuminati-esque people, and tell them what she saw.
Mm.
But she shoots herself.
Aye. Mm.
And tells them, fuck off, you'll never can. I mean, that's like, if you think about that too much, that'll fuck you up, man. You know what I mean? That, it's, we spoke about it again when we watched it. It's like, is it just that she doesn't want them to know? Mm. Is it so bad that, like, she, like, yeah, like, why is she killing herself? That was the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
If it's so bad, why is she killing herself to maybe go there?
Mm.
Is it maybe that it's good that she wants to go there? Mm. Or, I mean, what is it? You know, like, what's the... Or is it that this is all meaningless? Is, sure. You know,
yeah, I like that. It's just how it's just like, it's nothing's resolved. Yeah. You don't really know.
It's almost like...
Is she killing herself because, oh my God, what have I done? There's nothing there. And
oh, yeah, or like, yeah. It wasn't worth it.
Or,
it
she,
worth
or does it. She know the secret now and she's like... Mm-hmm.
Maybe like Anna's like still with it a bit, right? And she's been like come back and says, "Oh, it was great, except one of the it's ever tortured down the fucker. It's gonna burn, you know." And she's like, "Damn it, man." So yeah, it's just it's you just don't know. It's
yeah,
because there's everything in her face. Like you could say, like she's. Relieved to know, almost, you know, she's excited about what she's heard.
Mm.
Ish. She's terrified about what she's heard. Ish. Mm. You know what I mean? It's very kind of, it's played very neutral.
Yeah.
So you just don't know whether what she's heard's good, bad, or...
Yeah.
Hotspot.
Going back to the whole scene, the demon thing, you could see it, if someone's been through this, that what does that do to your mind? Does that mean that you would suddenly do have this kind of go into this mental state where you think I can see heaven and God, but is that caused by the physical effects or mm-hmm. is that you actually seeing something that's that normally you can't understand?
That's it.
Yeah,
yeah, so. That could have been complete gibberish that Anna spoke to her about,
yeah,
and effectively confirmed what you're saying there, like. So literally all we're doing is traumatising people and they're seeing whatever they see.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. She's the first one to be able to actually speak about.
Right.
To live long enough to tell someone what she saw. So it would be interesting, not that I'm looking for a sequel, but interesting to see, you know, have her have heard the same information from someone else previous.
Yeah.
And then say, "Oh man, like this is it's just random.
Mm.
It's there's no consistency between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally random, and just like you're saying, it's merely a vision that's brought on by like a sick mind.
Yeah,
effectively
sure.
At the end.
So here's just some kind of practical production facts,
sure.
Fun facts.
Okay.
I didn't know this, but it wasn't like a script that Logier had written, and he was like trying to get developed. It was the French studio Canal Plus had just rang him up and said, "Have you got any horror movies you want made?" They just wanted like quite kind of genre product, and they just came up with a script. Well, maybe he had the script, kind of an idea
well,
an for
idea,
the script.
Yeah, probably had that the matter actual side of it.
But he decided to shoot it in a very kind of loose way, very quick, because his previous film House of Voices had been one that he'd laboured over for years, and it was shot, everything was like storyboarded, and the end result he wasn't really happy with. I do like the film, but as I remember, it is quite stale in a way. Mm-hmm. It's kind of had the life sucked out of it.
As if he's almost kind of like pondered over it
too much. Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
He's happy with his storyboards.
Yeah.
And nothing that he can do can approach
those
storyboards.
It's quite slow, whereas this film is like, the pacing is like, mm-hmm. 100 miles an hour. So that was something that and he would like do things like he would actually just like talk to the actors during takes and stuff.
Okay.
Just to create more spontaneity and stuff like that. So I think it was shot in 16mm as well.
Right.
It's got a bit of a grainy
texture.
Yeah. On to make the Tall Man. Which I thought was great.
Haven't seen it yet.
Then he was in line to do the, a Hellraiser remake. But I
right, was that him that was in line? Right, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which sounded interesting.
Yeah.
I think he was wanting to take it, from what I read, he was wanting to take it more into a kind of, like, the homosexual subtext to the original.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he got really pissed off with the kind of American studio process. I saw this interview from Fright Fest. He was talking about how everything's done by committee, and like everything, there's no really space anymore for a single director vision. Everything's got to pass through like 20 people or whatever. So ultimately, it just gets like
boiled down to it. Yeah. Yeah. You can have this amazing idea, and they're like, oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you take this out?
Mm.
Or can you, oh, we like stripes. Can you put something with stripes in it? You know, like something as stupid as that. You know what I mean? Everyone's got their opinion, and everyone gets their opinion almost to the point where you start off with this one core idea, it goes through the filter, and you've got like, you've got your idea in there somewhere, but it's so tainted by everything, all this other shit that, that becomes the only way you're going to be allowed to make your film, I think. It's not a healthy system, I don't think, for the most part. It works sometimes, but and bigger directors definitely get what they want out. You know, I mean, it happens a lot, but that would be interesting to see though.
Remake,
you know, I think Clive Barker's still involved with that. I think.
Oh, is he?
I think actually, I may be wrong. He may be going to direct it again. I'm not sure. I know he's going to write it, and he wants Doug Bradley back for Pinhead again.
All right.
There you go. We see some side facts. Get some side facts.
Me.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do us for our conversation in matters. We're trying out a slightly new format for the episodes. We're going to cut the fat, Gary.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Think we agree on that, do we? No.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. I think it'll be better. Just
Basically try to condense the episodes down to the film.
Yes.
Yeah. So if there's anything important we need to talk about other than the film, we will do.
Mm.
Other than that, we're going to try and stick to the film. Yeah?
Yes. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, for a while anyway, and see how we feel about it. So that's going to do us for this episode of Cinema Subculture. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for our next episode. Stay tuned. Come back. See you next time. Next episode, which is going to be on Rob Zombie's Lords of Salem.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and join us next time.
Bye.
Nightmare.